Well, we're here with Secretary General of the Anglican Communion, Kenneth Kieran. Thank you for joining us. If you want to ask this question.
I wonder if you could say something about your sense of what emerged from the comments this morning about both the covenant and the sort of future shape, direction, and relationships of the instruments of communion, and what happens with all of those reactions going forward.
Well, I think first of all there was a reflection on what was being learned in the process of considering the covenant. I mean, that was the subject today, and that's consistent with what we've said about the covenant all along, that the it was going to be a long process. It was never going to be ended at ACC 15. But what I think we wanted to frame was to ask the question, what are people learning in the process of it? Because informally, the impression is that people are learning quite a bit about the process of considering the covenant, whether or not they end up accepting or rejecting it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was much stronger today than I expected. People do seem to be learning a lot about what it is to be an Anglican today, what it is to be a member of the Anglican Communion. And the question of whether you do or don't accept the covenant, the context at the end of that, is actually almost secondary to the learning experience. And I think that's probably very faithful to sections 1-3 of the covenant, which are actually very, very good expressions of what it is to be an Anglican today, I think. Obviously, there's some concerns being expressed about section 4, and I think we all expected that. So that, I think, was more positive than I expected. Certainly what I'd hoped for, but I was encouraged by that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the conversation about the instruments of communion, which was requested by ACC 14, again was more affirming of them than I had expected. There wasn't that much criticism or negativity about the instruments. Obviously, a lot of praise for the ACC, both the membership of it as a body that has lay people and clergy as well as bishops in it, mm-hmm. but also about the way in which issues have been processed here and the style of the ACC and the value of face-to-face engagement across the communion in the way in which we're doing it. That was a very strong affirmation of that, and very little criticism, except that they perhaps wanted to see even more lay people, and that I think is understandable as well. I think the reason behind that is that when a province, depending on its size, can elect 3, 2, or 1, if they elect 3 people, one of them has to be a layperson, 1 priest and 1 bishop. If they elect 2 people, they have to have a layperson, and either a priest or a deacon, and either a bishop or a priest for the second one. If they have only 1 member, and it's quite a number of provinces only have 1 member, that person can be from of any order, but the brackets are preferably lay. But the tendency is for churches to choose a bishop. And I think there's a little bit of dissatisfaction with that. And I see there's a resolution coming up about that, about lay involvement in commissions and so on, which I think is not unconnected with that. But otherwise, they were very positive about the ACC. They're also quite positive about the primate's meeting as well, seeing it as a very collegial body. And I think that reflects what happened in the Dublin meeting in 2011, which did emphasise collegiality and tried to recover the origins of the primates meeting and what it was intended to do there as well. And then even the Lambeth Conference, the only criticism that I heard of it was the cost of it. But actually it was probably an important collegial exercise and the suggestion that they might work more regionally if they can't afford the big assembly as well. So all of that, I think, was very positive, more positive than I expected. So I think what we're saying is, overall, putting the conversation about the covenant and the conversations about the instruments of communion together, is that the notion of a relational communion is really quite deeply embedded in the way we are, and is becoming the framework within which we judge any of our times of meeting and any of our documents. So the covenant is welcome insofar as it is relational. And a concern about section 4 is consistent with that. The instruments of communion are welcomed insofar as they're collegial bodies and bodies for meeting and encounter. So the whole thing I thought was very positive this morning.
Can I ask just a follow up on that? Do you see, or does, I don't know, say you, does the Secretariat or any of the instruments see a time when the covenant process would be over?
Yeah, I think so. I think there will be a point, yeah. I think, first of all, not all provinces have considered the covenant. Remember, a lot of provinces are on a three-year cycle, so they haven't had the opportunity actually to do it, to address it yet. Some provinces are actually on a five-year cycle, so it could be quite a period of time for them. I think the Standing Committee said it would review the situation after this ACC, and I think it will. I certainly don't think they're in a position to say everyone has considered the covenant and this is the final outcome. But I think there will be a point at which they will have to say, we'll review where we are with the covenant. The covenant is now operative for those churches who have adopted it. I think there will be a point. It'll be a fair bit into the future, in my opinion. My personal opinion is that you're inclined to be looking more towards ACC 16 for that sort of a point. But it's not me to make that decision. It's going to be the Standing Committee.
I'm sorry, then one other follow on that. If when this point comes where the Standing Committee says it's operative for the provinces that have adopted it, what about those who have said explicitly no or not in its current form? Does that change their status at all, do you foresee?
I don't see how it would change their status, because your status as a member of the Anglican Communion is determined by being listed in the schedule to the constitution of the ACC, and there's a mechanism for changing that, and the covenant is not in any way connected to it. When the covenant was launched, the Archbishop of Canterbury said it represented an intensification of relationships. And that, in other words, some churches within the communion were actually deciding to have a closer, a more wedded relationship than others. That doesn't have implications in itself for the others, but it does have implications for those who decide voluntarily to have that intensification of relationships. Because the covenant has a lot of commitments in it. Every statement of the covenant, every phrase of the covenant, has a commitment, a matching commitment. Those commitments are quite serious commitments. And I think that's where the difference will be seen for those who have actually adopted the covenant. Not, are you in or out of the communion because of what you've decided, which I think is sometimes the question that's knocking around.
Glad to ask a question. I was very interested in the comments this morning that actually the process of the covenant itself was welcomed, and that has actually revealed quite a lot to the churches about themselves. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. First of all, I speak from my own experience, and then I speak from what I've heard from others. I have been present for a number of provinces as they've been considering the covenant, and it's been marked by giving a lot of time to it. And also, I think they've been trying to adopt a different way of engaging with this particular subject than they do with their normal business. Most synods, you know, deal with their work by way of resolutions and so on. And the discussion of the covenants have been much more, much slower, much more thoughtful, much more engaged. So therefore I think they're learning not only a lot about the covenant, not only about a lot about Anglicanism, but a lot about how they meet together and discuss issues that are of really serious concern to them, like the covenant. That's my personal experience. I think anecdotally people are raising a lot of questions about what it is to be an Anglican and coming up with very positive answers, and so they're learning a lot in the whole process, and it's been quite a learning experience for people. You know, if you actually have to go through the covenant line by line, you look through not only what the instruments of communion are, not only what the history is, but also the big section shaped around the marks of mission. And as you noticed, in other parts of our agenda, the marks of mission seem to be taking a much higher status within the communion. And I think that's partly because they're a big factor in the covenant itself. Mm-hmm. That help?
I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about the last item that was discussed before the council broke for lunch. Some observers would have thought that that resolution on continuing in Davao would have just sort of smoothly gone through the process. Instead, it seemed to hit this roadblock about is continuing in Davao a problem-solving mechanism. Mm. And I'm wondering if you have any reaction to that, and can sort of bring any of your senses to what was the concern behind that.
I think Continuum Dharma has always lived on this with this tension. It is a process. It is a way of engaging with other people across issues of difference. Those differences are determined by the groups who are going to do the meeting. And you heard a list from one of them, I forget which speaker it was, who listed the sort of things they had talked about in their Dharma. It was about mission. It was about Christian-Muslim relations. It was about the way they made decisions themselves within their own province. So whatever the differences are, that's it. That's the way in which they have it. And the Indaba is a process. I think the concern was that you don't simply say, well, if it's only a process, then all we're going to do is talk about it. There's always a desire to say we're actually going to address difficult issues and perhaps find a way forward on them. And I think that's been true of the whole Indaba process. So Indaba itself is not a way of solving problems, but the process itself ought to lead to a better addressing of problems, and in some cases to their resolution. So I think people sometimes jump to the end and say, there's no point doing this unless we're going to solve our problems. Others say, no, it's going to be valuable, the process is going to be valuable in itself, even if it doesn't help us to deal with our problems. So I think you'll always have that tension between the two. But I think the honesty of the Indaba conversations that I've heard about, and I haven't participated in any of them, but those I've heard about, has been really a very serious learning experience for a lot of people, and a deepening of their own faith. I think that was where the resolution came in on that tension, to say, oh, well, you know, we do accept as a process, but actually we could actually face a lot of very difficult issues this way, which is very encouraging. Thank you very much. Thank you.